It's playoff season on the PGA Tour. The reigning FedEx Cup champion Victor Hovland hasn't won since the Tour Championship last August, and he needs a big week to keep his postseason alive. We're heading down to Memphis to hear from last year's king. And the Queen of the Olympics had her mic drop moment at the weekend with a gold medal that qualified her for the LPGA Tour's Hall of Fame. But Lydia Ko's not walking away, at least not yet. She's playing the Scottish Women's Open this week. We're going to hear what the celebrations have been like. And the next generation of stars is already collecting trophies. Rianne Malixi has won two national titles this year, including the US Women's Amateur at the weekend. She is with us. This is Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today on this Tuesday. He's Jordan Cornett. I'm Eamon Lynch. Jordan, big week in golf. There's two big events that are really getting my attention. And one of them, the best amateurs in the world, they ain't getting paid a dime. On the other side of it, FedEx Cup playoff start. They're going to get paid a lot. We just don't know who yet.
Yeah, and I'm in equal interest for both of them. Luke Clayton, I'm on watch for him because I don't care how tired he may be coming out of Greensboro, he's still captivating. And as for the other side of it, the professional ranks, can Xander make this playoff interesting? I think that's got everybody captivated as well.
That's probably what he's going to have to do to really influence this Player of the Year debate. But I'm curious about Clanton as well. He's the guy who's got to be under a lot of scrutiny out in Hazeltine. If you can hang with the best players in the world, you're going to be under a little more pressure when you're playing with the best amateurs.
And he can't be tired. He's 20 years old. So he's got a ton of energy in the tank. As for those FedEx Cup playoffs, let's talk about them. They have arrived indeed as the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings, have advanced to Memphis for the FedEx St. Jude Championship. You can catch live first-round coverage this Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Scottie Scheffler securing that top spot in the standings for the regular season comes with another $8 million in bonus prize money as we revisit some of his best moments in the Players' Championship. Par 4, fourth, second shot, holds out for eagle. That would hold off Wyndham Clark by one to win his second consecutive Players' Championship. And look, there's a lot more moments than simply that, Eamon.
Yeah, and what goes lovely with a little gold man trophy? Green jacket. He had another one of those to his closet. His second green jacket in 3 years. 68 on Sunday at Augusta National gave him the Masters.
I mean, it was just an incredible year for Scottie Scheffler. I mean, he even became a polarizing figure with the incident in Kentucky, which probably led to some emotions as the regular season wound down and he took his talent to the Olympics across the pond in Paris. Here on the par 4, 15, second shot leads to a tap in birdie. And then par 4, 17th, a birdie putt.
This all part of a final round 62.
I mean, it's just cool to watch Scotty do his individual thing, but then represent the country at the podium right there, all smiles. Eventually got a little bit emotional there. Here's a snapshot of the season for Scottie Scheffler. And those numbers aren't lying. That graphic in front of you is accurate. 16 starts, 6 wins. 2 runner-ups, 14 top 10s, never missed a cut. Also won the gold medals we just showed you in the Paris Olympics.
What about the number 2 guy in the official World Golf ranking? Xander Schauffele. He finally got the monkey off his back with this one. That was the putt at Valhalla that won his first major championship, the PGA, by a single stroke over Bryson DeChambeau.
Eamon, a lot of people may have thought, well, Xander got, you know, over the hump. That's probably all he has in the tank, right? That seminal achievement for Xander. You can go back to being Scotty's world, but not so fast. The Open Championship right here, par 4. And the 11th, his second shot.
This was a hole that undid many guys with the railroad tracks on the right that week at Troon, but certainly didn't hurt Xander Schauffele.
I mean, shooting on the back nine, 31 to win is 100, to win the 152nd Open at Royal Troon. Xander Schauffele officially entered the conversation for, wait, maybe it's not just all about Scottie Scheffler. Pretty impressive stuff there for him. Xander Schauffele, a recap snapshot of his year, 18 starts, those 2 wins, majors, 2 runner-ups. He as well did not miss a cut, 12 top 10 finishes. Not too shabby.
Not at all. So let's take a look at the world number 3, Rory McIlroy. This was at the Zurich Classic paired with Shane Lowry, team event. He needed to get up and down in the last hole. He stuck that close. Shane Lowry tapped it in, which left Martin Traynor needing this par putt to force a playoff. Slides by.
may have been a team event, but it's still good to see Rory back in the win column, no questioning.
Shane thinks you're supposed to lift your partner as well as a trophy.
I love that friendship between those two.
Here's the Wells Fargo Championship. McIlroy already won it three times. This on the par 5 10th for eagle. That gave him a one-shot lead. He was chasing down Xander Schauffele on this day. And then the 15th, third from the bunker.
Pull that thing out for eagle. And it felt like the swagger was officially back.
He stumped everyone on the field that day and won his fourth Wells Fargo Championship. Out at Quail Hollow in Charlotte, North Carolina. Oof.
Out of the U.S. Open. Hard to watch,
yeah,
even still.
Where the season kind of hit a rough patch for Rory McIlroy. That for par on the 18th. Ended up losing to Bryson DeChambeau by one stroke. Three bogeys in his final four holes.
Still makes you uneasy to watch. End of the Open Championship. Never really quite got right there.
No, first round 78. Never really recovered from it. 75 here in the second round. It was the second start after the U.S. Open. But he missed the cut by quite a margin at Royal Troon. Here's the summary of Rory McIlroy's season. Moments of brilliance, but certainly not the consistent brilliance of the other two we've seen. 16 starts, those couple of wins, also one in Dubai on the European Tour at the start of the year. Runner-up, obviously, at the US Open. Half a dozen top tens. One of those wins, of course, a team event. And that is basically the recap of the top three players in the world, what they've done this year. What's been your takeaway from this season on what you've seen?
You could go a lot of different ways, Eamon, but I refuse to bury the lead here. And I refuse not to speak on, albeit the obvious, I just refuse to get bored with the excellence of Scottie Scheffler. I refuse to. What we see from
easy
him.
Easy to get bored when you see it every week, right?
And he's not a polarizing figure. People want more personality. People want more storylines. There were the jokes that were made, which was an unfortunate circumstance that happened in Kentucky with him. But that's about as interesting as it got off the golf course with him. Yeah. But when you look at what he achieved on the course. I mean, those six wins, those majors, those signature wins. It's incredible. Six tour wins, two majors, four signature events. This guy lapped the field in the FedEx Cup point standings, and he did it all with ease. And when you look at it and make the comparisons to Tiger Woods and what he achieved in 2009, that's not to be taken lightly. So maybe he's not the polarizing figure that Tiger Woods was. Maybe he's not this galvanizing guy that Tiger was. But you're watching things that we haven't seen in 15 years since arguably the greatest golfer ever did it. So to me, what you're seeing right now needs to be appreciated. It can't be buried. It can't be taken for granted. Majors are majors. But signature events matter, too. And to win four of those this year, I think without some extenuating circumstances, may have been a seventh win for him this year. It's been incredible to watch what Scottie's done.
I think the comparisons to Tiger, they're frequent, but they're valid because Scottie's also doing what Tiger did, which is skew the perception of what the best player in the world ought to be doing week in, week out. Prior to Tiger, no one in golf history played as consistently high a level of golf in terms of his finishes, week in, week out. Scottie Scheffler is doing that. We've just seen how rare it is for Scottie Scheffler to disappear outside the top 10. And he's playing events where he is playing against the best in the world. And he's also, I suppose, my biggest takeaway of the season is Scottie Scheffler related as well, because it's he who cares least about the money makes most of it.
Interesting.
And he's tuned out all the noise. And we just saw that the Comcast Business Tour top 10, the $8 million bonus, that you don't actually have to do anything to earn that, Scottie. You've got that $8 million, but he's got $28 million in official prize money on the PGA.
Say that out loud one more time.
28 big ones. He's about to play the next 2 weeks or two $20 million tournaments to start the playoffs, and then of course the Tour Championship, which has a $25 million first place bonus for the FedEx Cup champion this year, more than any prize in the history of the sport. It's very feasible if Scottie Scheffler keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to make north of $60 million playing golf this year. And it doesn't faze him. You don't hear Scottie Scheffler talking about money. If you ask Scottie Scheffler how much he's made this year, I bet Scottie Scheffler can't actually tell you. And he's managed to tune out the noise. And to me, that's what a lot of guys aren't able to do. Some, they're just actively involved in stuff. You look at the guys who are on the PGA Tour's policy board, who by dint of position have to be involved. Only one of them has actually won on the PGA Tour this year, and that was Peter Malnati. And you're talking about, you know, the guys like Patrick Cantlay and Adam Scott, who you would expect to be more factors in there. But Scotty's ability to tune out all the noise, keep everything from the swing to his entire life so simple, and not focus on anything other than the fact that he's a competitive guy.
And the fact that every hurdle that's been thrown in front of him, everybody says, well, this will become the deterrent. And the latest one was, well, he's going to become a father. So naturally, his focus will shift, which always made me uncomfortable as a father, because we see mothers achieve at a high level when they have families. And it's no different for a father. They can navigate those waters, however turbulent they may become in your new world. And Scotty's done that. There's nothing that can truly get in front of this guy. He doesn't tinker with things. He doesn't get bored with the excellence. He just continues to go achieve. So I think what we're going to see is sustainable, and we might see a run that at the end of the day, we might look back and go, what does this even compare to? Who knows with what we've seen from Scotty at this point. But a question for you in the immediate, the player of the year for this year, as we wax poetic about Scotty, it seems like an open and shut case to me, Eamon.
On paper, you would think it's a two-horse race. If a guy wins two majors, he's in a player of the year conversation. And so on paper, it's two. The reality is it's one, because what we've seen some examples of in the last few years is players will vote and prioritize, or at least give equal weight to what a guy does on the PGA Tour as to what he does in majors. We saw that last year when Scottie Scheffler beat out Jon Rahm. It was PGA Tour loyalty. Rahm probably had the better season, but Rahm left for LIV halfway through the voting period, and I think the players held him to account for that. But you go back 5 years, Brooks Koepka won a major, Rory McIlroy didn't. But Rory McIlroy won the FedEx Cup and was voted Player of the Year by his peers. And Rory's not even in a conversation this time at all. This is a battle between the world number one and the world number two, not the world number three. But Scotty's consistent brilliance, I think, is going to get him the win.
So do you think if Xander performs and bests Scotty in the FedEx Cup playoff, it's going to be a long road to be able to do it? Does that shift?
It makes it more feasible to have an alternative to Scotty Scheffler. If Xander can face down Scotty head-to-head and he wins a couple of these playoff events, then absolutely I think he's even deeper into that conversation with a real chance of winning. But I think a lot of players are also going to vote on the statistical brilliance that you see out of Scotty Scheffler.
Yes.
And the guy leads, or almost leads, almost every single meaningful category on the tour. And when the players are doing the voting, I think stuff like that matters because they know how difficult it is to achieve that level.
Yeah, look, when you talk about Xander, you'd say he's had an elite year. He's had a sublime season. When you talk about Scotty, you'd say this is dominant. Really simple way to have this conversation is, would Scotty want Xander's season or would Xander want Scotty's season? Mm-hmm. I think it's very clear what the answer would be there. Both would want Scotty's season. The comparisons for what Xander's done this year aren't going towards a Tiger Woods 2009. That's where they inevitably lead when you talk about Scotty and what he's done this year. For all those reasons, I think it's clear-cut no matter what happens in the playoff. This is Scotty's season.
You don't
one to be
think
remembered.
If Xander runs the table
I don't think it's going to happen, one. But I also think what was achieved in Paris matters, too. I mean, that's part of this season of brilliance from Scotty. He went across the pond. He brought home gold, too. I mean, this season has continued on for this man, continuing to be dominant. It makes it a little bit more interesting of a conversation, but to this point, it's an open and shut case for me.
Well, I think Xander Schauffele might have something to say.
Oh, maybe I motivated him here if he's tuned into Golf Channel.
Hopefully today. Some bulletin board material. Well, one guy who's not in this conversation for Player of the Year, Victor Hovland, last year's FedEx Cup champion. 2024 has been a different story, though, for Victor. We're going to hear from the world number 7, who's trying to keep his playoffs alive. That's coming up next.
Yeah, I mean, this game is tough, and obviously I think we can easily get into a habit of trying to be too perfect, because you don't have to play perfect golf to play well. But if you're looking a certain way and the ball is not doing what you're visualizing, yes, you can make a birdie, you can hit the ball close, but that's not a great indicator that you're gonna do that day in, day out. So when I'm in practice, seeing that the ball flight is corresponding better with what I'm visualizing, that gives me more confidence. And yes, I still might go out here and shoot a bad score, but I'm not gonna be that upset about it, because I know that the processes or the shot making itself is getting closer to where I want it to, and then my likelihood of playing better goes up as well. So
You are the you're the defending champion of the FedEx Cup. Does this week feel like the start of that title defense? Or does it? What does it feel like?
Yeah, you could say that. Although I had a really nice weekend here last year, and if it wasn't for the 18th hole, I might have had a really good chance to win this one as well last year. So that was cool. I love this place, and I have some good memories here. But I try not to think about my FedEx rank or all that stuff so much this week. I've obviously been vocal about me not playing very well this year, so that's kind of what I'm focusing on, just trying to get the horse back on the track and work on the things that I need to work on to play good golf, and then all the other stuff that we'll see. That'll work out if I take care of that stuff.
Mate, you mentioned the weekend here last year. I'll take you back to either it was today or tomorrow maybe here last year, you having a session on that range that looked like really intense, terrible even. You looked upset, frustrated. It was shocking. And I told everybody then, I said, oh, no good, stay off Hov. And you had a bad first round, but from that point on, you went and blitzed the place.
Yep.
Is there anything from that that you could recreate and maybe do the same thing?
I've had so many of those range tests since the last year, it's hard to remember them. But we all play bad golf sometimes and we get frustrated, and hopefully you can keep it still something to learn from when you're there, or else you're just wasting your time. But I feel like we just kind of had to air everything out and really talk about, okay, why was that a bad shot? And sometimes you need to hit those moments to actually learn something and actually take action in a different direction. And Joe just gave me a really good feel. And then when I try to recreate that feel on the range, I saw some improvement. And then that gave me the confidence that, okay, when I go out there tomorrow, I think I know where the ball is going and I can control it. And then as soon as I just saw a couple of good shots, that gives you that belief and you just run with it. And then I started chipping in, I started making putts, and then, you know, that's the game of golf for you.
And just quietly, do you like being an underdog? Obviously this year you are an underdog, whereas last year you sort of were right up there, obviously.
I don't know. I feel like maybe I've been an underdog in some way my whole life, so I guess I'm kind of used to that position, but it's not something that I think about too much. I'm just trying to control the things that I can control. I know that I've slipped up a little bit this year. I haven't been playing as well as I would have liked, and I'm just working on the things that I need to work on to get back to where I was last year. And then I believe I can do some great things again. But we need to take care of that stuff.
Go up here to Sean.
A little different topic. Andrew Green said that you two have gotten to know each other a little bit, as he does Carsten Kriek.
Yep.
What have you seen in how he goes about his process, and what do you maybe appreciate about what he does?
Yeah, I've always been super interested in course design. So to actually spend some time with a well-established course architect, it's really fun for me. And I think he values listening to good players like myself, and I know Ricky's been involved a little bit, and the golf team at Oklahoma State, the coaches. There's so many people involved, and I gotta give him credit for that, because when you're hired to do a job, it's easy to say, okay, I'm the expert here, so you guys just sit over there and I'll do my thing. But he's building that golf course for the golf team. So it's been a very good relationship where there's a dialogue, and he's asking, what do you guys want to see? What kind of shots do you guys want? And man, it's been a while since I've been to Carsten and seen it, but last time I was there, it looks completely different. It looks like it kind of has that major championship golf course vibe. It's a big golf course, big time golf course. It's going to be really hard. But I like the way he thinks, and I'm super excited to go on and play it next time.
Have you seen any photos of what he's done at Eastlake, and what do you think him getting his hand on that could make it look like?
Yeah, I have not seen anything. And that's where, you know, I love Eastlake. So I don't know how much you can do to that place to make it better. So it's almost like there's a bigger chance to make it worse. I hope that's not the case. And I know Andrew's a very smart guy, and I'm sure he's going to do a great job. But there is a danger there when you've already got an elite golf course that's been around for many, many years. And every time we go, there's still a great golf course, like I believe this one is as well. You don't have to trick it up anymore. You don't have to make it longer. It's just a good golf course. So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully I make it there in a couple weeks.
Over here on the left.
Tim Buckley with the Daily Memphian. You mentioned this being one of your favorite courses. What is it that you like most about here? And what is it you find most difficult about the layout?
Yeah, it's not just one thing that stands out, but I just like that it's a premium to hit the fairways. You got a good variety of dogleg lefts, dogleg rights, and you have a lot of water. Water always makes things interesting because now it forces the player to play a bit more conservative off the tee. But then when you bail out, there's rough or a fairway bunker that catches the ball, and now you have a very difficult shot going into the greens, especially with this Bermuda, really sticky Bermuda around the greens. So if you land ashore of the green, it just sticks. Or if you hit the green, because the greens are firm and fast, it's gonna roll over the green. So it's really difficult to get it close, but it's not super tricked up. Everything is right there in front of you, but yet you have certain angles, a lot of, you know, branches and trees that are just in the way to make everything more tricky. And I just think it's a genius golf course. You don't need to, have courses that are 8,000 yards long and wide open, because, yeah, I think it, just a perfect example is like number 13 at Augusta, for example. They made that course or that hole way longer, and I believe the scoring average was lower than it was before they made the change. So it's like just little subtleties, because I remember when that tee was all the way up, you had branches on the left that was overhanging the tee box, and now you have to hook something around. And if you try to do it, it's easy to clip a tree and you hit it in the water, or you got to re-tee off the tee. So it's just little subtle things like that, and I think this course is a great example of that.
Fast becoming one of the more fascinating interviews in this game. No stone unturned in the world of Victor Hovland. What do you make of where he is right now?
That's the problem. I think the problem is he's so fascinating. He's so smart. He's so analytical. There's a phrase that we use a lot when I played basketball back in the day, paralysis by analysis. Don't overthink it. Just go out there, read and react. Golf is a very different sport, but it's also very mental. And a guy like that with his level of intelligence, he's overthinking it. He is the antithesis of what Scottie Scheffler is as we talk about Scottie. Scottie doesn't get bored with excellence. Scottie is okay with being great and continuing to approach it. There's a lot to be critical of with Scottie's swing, but it works, so he doesn't change it. We look back to last year, the FedEx Cup playoff. We heard Victor just talk about it, what he was able to achieve there. And now look at him. He's gone through more swing coaches than my wife has outfits before a date night with us. This is a guy who made too many changes and is kind of trying to figure it all out right now. I love how analytical
Victor's
is.
Trying to get better. Your wife has settled. Let's yes, be clear about that.
Well done. You're absolutely right. It's just tough to think about. And again, golf is this. Yeah. I could only dream to be half of what these guys are. But to think what he was a year ago to now, it's hard not to think this was mostly on Victor, if that's fair to say.
Yeah, Victor will admit that he is an inquisitive guy, and he would also be the first one to say that that's what got him to this point. And he came on our set during Live from the US Open at Pinehurst, and we asked him about what seemed at one point earlier this year to be something of a revolving door of teachers. And it's not as though he was building long-term relationships. He likes to get into deep conversations with teachers, pick their brains, take what knowledge he thinks works for him, and he thinks he's disciplined enough, and believes he is, to throw out what doesn't work for him and then apply what does work for him, which is a dangerous road to go down for players, but he's quite confident that he has the discipline to do that.
And it's worked for Bryson. It has worked for certain guys.
It has, and Victor did make the point that I thought was quite salient, that every time he opens a door, he closes one behind him. He's not opening every door to take every piece of advice from every source. But again, it's also kind of hard if you're doing that to find your way back to what's your base level? What are your foundational principles here of your golf swing. Victor, he does give the impression that he's searching a little bit, and he did talk in that press conference about the idea that there were a lot of frustrating rounds and range sessions out there over the course of the last year. But he's still, you know, he's comfortably inside the playoffs right now. He needs a good week. He's 57th. He needs a good week here to make it into the BMW Championship. Next week, he's off by his standards, but certainly compared to last year. That's a high bar.
Which it is a high bar. And look, it's not like he's off in the corner in the room by himself. I mean, you can look at a few guys that have had up and down roads, maybe not have gone as long without success as him. But look at Spieth. Look at JT. Look at even Wyndham, the year he's had. Like, it's a tough sport. As we talk about not getting bored with success, it's also presumptuous of us to just assume these guys are going to go out there and win all the time. Yeah. Like, that's not what the sport is. So patience, luckily Victor has that, which will serve him well.
And he's certainly always searching to get better. And we're going to be able to find out what the results of that are at the FedEx St. Jude Championship starting Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel and Peacock. Same applies on Friday, and then on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, Sunday, 12 p.m. Eastern. Coverage resumes.
My wife likes me. My wife likes me. My wife likes me. When Golf Today returns, we're turning our attention to a national championship this week as the U.S. Amateur gets underway at Hazeltine. Coming up next, we're joined by one of its competitors who's quite a family legacy to live up to. Jake Ackerman joins us on the other side of the break.
Someone making his USGA Championship debut at Hazeltine is this kid, 18-year-old Jake Ackerman of Riverview, Florida. Golf nerds will know his mom, who's a two-time U.S. Women's Amateur Champion, Vicki Getz Ackerman. Jake has signed a letter of intent to attend the University of Coastal Georgia. He was a medalist in the amateur local qualifier, where he shot a 64, went on to sectional qualifying, where he earned his place in this week's field. And Jake joins us now from Hazeltine, Minnesota. Jake, congratulations on making your USGA Championship debut. A little bit of a rough day yesterday in the first round of stroke play. You've got a tee time at Hazeltine this afternoon. What's the experience been like so far?
It's been surreal. It's an amazing moment for me. I mean, it's my first time. It's wonderful. Everything's perfect.
Jake, I love the positive outlook as you head into day two here. It's a pretty big week for you. You're competing here, obviously, for an opportunity for a national championship, but you also begin college electing to choose Coastal Georgia as your school of choice. I mean, this has to all feel like a whirlwind for you. So many firsts in front of you.
Yes, sir. It's amazing. My coach is super excited for what's happening right now, so he's excited to have me when I come back, so it's going to be amazing.
You've got a 1:12 p.m. tee time this afternoon, Jake. What's the approach going into it? Does it differ any now that you've gotten the first round nerves out of the way in a national championship? Are you just going to take an aggressive approach out there today?
Hazeltine is, you can't attack it like any other golf course. You have to play strategically and play smart, so as long as I play smart golf, I should be able to score pretty well out there.
Well, Jake, you can certainly lean on some family ties. Your mother, Vicki, is a two-time U.S. amateur champion. What kind of role model has she been to you in life, but also in the sport of golf?
I mean, she's helped me a lot throughout my process from when I was a little kid to when I was in high school. She helped me. She taught me a couple things with tournaments and stuff, so she's been a main help for my whole golf process throughout my whole golf career.
Your mom just made her debut, actually, in the U.S. Senior Women's Open, and I believe you caddied for her that week. What's it like spending a week around legends like that?
It was awesome. It was a great experience. The course was unbelievable, and it was awesome because I got to spend time with her before I go off to college.
I mean, that's an incredible experience and opportunity for you. Speaking of opportunities, I mean, this is rare air for Coastal Georgia and anybody who's represented their golf program. You're the first to ever qualify for the USAM from Coastal Georgia, and you haven't even stepped foot on campus yet as an actual student, that coming at the end of the week. Are you aware of that history, and what does that mean to you as you charge through this week?
I just found out about that maybe, 2 days ago. So, I mean, it was – I'm very excited to start my college career because it's going to be a lot of fun, but it's just everything right now. It's just big. Like, it's just a big moment for me.
Well, Jake, big moments you don't shy away from. I mean, simply trying to qualify to get to the USAM, that was a pressure-packed situation. You seem like you're built to handle these.
I mean, I like big pressure moments, but this is a lot to handle, to be honest.
As it being a lot to handle, I mean, a 17-year-old, I believe you are, 17 years old. Is that right, Jake, 17?
18
years old. Still very young.
Yes, sir.
And when you talk about the pressures of trying to handle this, who do you lean on? How do you find that calm amidst the storm?
I mean, I asked my mom for advice, and she's been in this situation multiple times. So her giving me advice helps a lot.
You've come through both local and sectional qualifying in some style to earn your spot here at Hazeltine, Jake. Regardless of, I know you've got ambitions for today and for the rest of this week, but regardless of what actually happens at the amateur, you've got to take some positives away from how you actually earned your spot there.
Yes, sir. Yep.
What was the most memorable moment in terms of that process of getting to this accomplishment, of making it to Hazeltine?
Probably the rounds that I shot, like the for local qualifying. It was amazing. I played great both rounds.
Well, again, I go back to those bloodlines. Your uncle Nicky, he qualified or finished runner up in 86 in the junior AM. So then you couple that with your mother Vicky being a two-time USAM champ and what you're achieving at only 18 years old. How much golf is discussed amongst the family when you guys all get together?
A lot of golf, a lot.
And that's got to be, I imagine, the inspiration for you to choose the path that you're currently thriving in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, even when you go to Thanksgiving dinner, you're around some of the best who've ever played the game at the amateur level. Jake, when you find yourself out there on the range at Hazeltine and you're watching the best amateurs in the world warming up beside you, are you kind of comparing or taking stock of your game next to them? And have you seen anything so far that's made you rethink what you want to work on?
I mean, all those kids are just amazing golfers. It's the top golfers in the world, basically, amateur-wise. And it kind of motivates me to get better. It motivates me, it wants me to do better and compete better with them.
Well, we certainly wish you the best of luck for the rest of this week. We'll be watching this afternoon as well, and hopefully later on in the week in match play. Best of luck, Jake.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
We're from the amateur to the women's amateur. It concluded Sunday at Southern Hills Country Club. Rhianne Malixie left with the trophy. She can't celebrate too hard, though. She's only 17, but we're going to ask her how life is going as the champion. She's joining us next. Rhianne Malixie joins us now. Rhianne, congratulations on the victory. It was very interesting watching what was a very tight match come down the stretch, because you started to suddenly play a lot better the closer you got to the end of the match. You made a lot of birdies. Where did that kind of game and focus come from that deep in the match when you're only 17 years old?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And yes, I'll credit that to my dad. It's all part of my training, where I always have to play my best golf in the last stretch of the match. My dad would tell me to finish strong on the last four holes, in which I told myself to do on the last five and six holes, in which I really did manage to do a job and finish that four straight birdie stretch.
Rhianne, a familiar foe in both the junior and in the women's AM in Asterisk Tally, who you bested both times around. You've been roommates with her. You bested her twice here. You guys have developed somewhat of a kinship. Can you explain what that relationship has blossomed into, both competing against each other and also becoming friends?
It's amazing. I admire Asterisk as a player and, more importantly, as a person. She's just a very nice kid, very mature beyond her years, and I just love and how she composed herself that week, and I can't be proud of her.
Typically, the amateur final round is played 36 holes in one day, but because you were playing around potential stormy weather out there, you played 18 holes Saturday, 18 holes Sunday. Did that change your approach to the final, or did that kind of rest period make it a little bit easier or more difficult for you to keep any kind of momentum?
It was kind of difficult for me because I was expecting to play 36 holes on Sunday, but we had to move the first 18 on the afternoon of Saturday. And I was kind of tired in that day because we did our semifinal smash in the morning, but it was a good thing we did the final 18 on Sunday afternoon, so I have some in and really get to prep on that match.
Rhian, being so young, only 17, and achieving what you've achieved, I know your father, you talk about him coaching you up. You mentioned celebrating with dinner with your mother. What have your parents meant to you as you go into uncharted territory as a 17-year-old, a superstar, if you will?
It means a lot. I'm very lucky to have my parents with me ever since the first day, and my mom just traveling around the world with me and just competing really good events just means the world to me, and I can't really ask for better parents.
I'm curious how much you knew about Southern Hills before you went there, Rhian, because it is a fairly well-known golf course, obviously has held a lot of major championships over the years. Did you go watch any old YouTube videos of tournaments there to try to get some familiarity with the golf course before the Amateur?
No, I have not, but I know it was a championship course, and I know it was not going to be an easy week. And yeah, the greens were brutal. It was a tough walk, and I'm just so happy that I got through it. And yeah, it was amazing to play in such a phenomenal golf course.
Rhian, college on the horizon. I believe you selected Duke as your college of choice. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
What is behind the decision to go to Duke, an incredible university with a very proud program?
Yeah, Duke is a very good academic program. My decision in Duke is just because the whole atmosphere in it, it felt like family to me. It felt like home. I love campus. I love the coaches. And more importantly, the team. I was very comfortable with the girls. And those were kind of like the factors in deciding on why I committed to Duke.
Before you even step on campus, Rhian, you've already won the biggest title in women's amateur golf. How does that kind of reset your goals, or what do you need to do to kind of keep yourself motivated as to what the next target or goal is for you when you've already achieved something so significant?
Yeah, just achieving something major just makes me want to work harder and to become a really better player. And that won't stop me from grinding. When I go back to the Philippines, I'll just keep on training and really see how my game goes. And hopefully it will be good enough to reach the bigger stage.
Rhian, I think back to when I was 17 years old and I had heroes that I wanted to be like in the sport I played, of basketball. Maybe I should have had better heroes because I never made it nearly to the level you have in your sport of golf. But as you look to role models in the sport that are achieving, is there somebody you say, I try to model my game after, or I enjoy watching tournament in and tournament out on the professional ranks?
Yeah, I always love watching Tiger during his prime, like in the 2000s. And recently, I've been watching a lot of Nelly Korda, and they're just really a joy to watch in the game.
When you win something as significant as the women's amateur, Rhian, having just won the junior a few weeks earlier, did that make you at any point think about maybe I do actually want to go straight into the professional ranks and play against a Nelly Korda?
Yeah, in every tournament I play, I always try to win, and I think there's just no better goal if you're heading to a tournament and not try to win. But yeah, there's always in my head, like, yeah, I would love to play with Nelly Korda and all these good professional golfers. And that's why I keep on working. And hopefully when the time comes, I'll be able to compete against them.
Rhian, only the second to ever win both the girls' junior and the women's AM. When I say that out loud, understanding the history that comes with that, you seem to be very knowledgeable in history, as you mentioned players like Tiger Woods all the way back to the early 2000s in his prime. What does that mean to you to know you've had such an achievement?
It's amazing. It's very surreal. It's not every day I get to, or like a junior gets to win two USGA events a year. So I know it's really huge. And being the first player from the Philippines to win the USAM just means the world to me, and it's always an honor to raise the Philippine flag, to always compete in the bigger stage representing my flag.
Well, Rianne, competing at a high level, certainly you are. Congratulations on an incredible, a spectacular summer, and we look forward to what the future holds for you.
Thank you so much.
In the field in Scotland on the LPGA Tour this week is Lydia Ko. Over the weekend, made history at the Paris Olympic Games when she secured a gold medal, her third overall in the Olympics. The victory punched her ticket to the LPGA Tour Hall of Fame. We hear from Lydia Ko now.
I actually don't know if it has sunk in yet. I didn't sleep that Saturday night just because of travel logistics and all that. So I, you know, went to sleep for the first time on Sunday night, and it was pretty surreal. Woke up and I was like, was that a dream? Did that just really happen? But yeah, you know, super exciting. You know, I've gotten an overwhelming amount of support from the players and just people I know, and just very grateful for literally this once in a lifetime opportunity.
You just mentioned you've gotten a lot of support from some of the players and others around you. What has maybe been the most impactful message or that you've gotten from someone after accomplishing what you've done?
You know, a lot of the ladies that are already in the Hall of Fame reached out, and especially somebody like Nancy Lopez. Every time I see her, she gives me good vibes, you know, always you know, words of wisdom, and for somebody like her to, like, you know, take me under her wing and support me, it means a lot. But, you know, there's just been, you know, so many people, like Meg and Beth said they had, like, cried, you know, watching me, and it means a lot. And, you know, I've seen some of my good friends here as well. So, yeah, it's pretty surreal. You know, I was talking to one of the moms yesterday and nearly brought tears to my eyes again. And I think as a player and like somebody that's involved, we all know how hard it is. So it's like we're all going on this journey together, and for so many of the people that, you know, I play alongside and see them to you know, support me like this, it means a lot. And I think that's the most I guess grateful thing of all of this.
Just a couple more from me before we open it up to the media here. Just what is it, you know, what, how does it feel to have Hall of Famer next year, like, you know, part of your title now? And what does the Hall of Fame in particular, you know, mean to you?
Yeah, you know, super cool. Molly gave me, you know, the warmest welcome to the Hall of Fame on that Saturday. And, you know, I think I've said multiple times before, I didn't really think I was capable of getting in any sort of Hall of Fame. And to say that now I've gotten the Hall of Fame, you know, at my sport and something that has given me already so much. It's surreal, and I know all the ladies and legends that are like in the Hall of Fame, they are the greats, and you know, they kind of led this pathway for us to have this kind of opportunity. So to say that I'm part of that kind of history book is really cool. And yeah, I think I almost need like a few weeks off to like really take everything in of all of this. It's been in my backpack. I haven't gotten the case yet, so I haven't been able to fully treasure it very well, but it's right there now. So
it's, yeah, nice to be able to sort of look at that, and then it's real, isn't it, when you look at that?
I mean, I actually haven't looked at it in a couple of days. You know, I looked at, I think I, like, when I was flying with it, it was weird to kind of take it out, because not everybody knows that I'm an athlete nor an Olympian or that I had won a medal. So it's kind of awkward at times. You know, I like don't really want to, like, I don't feel like it's bragging, but I have to. And it's just, yeah, I haven't seen it. I, like, we took it out this morning to bring it out here. But yeah, I mean, I haven't seen my Rio or Tokyo Olympic medals since the day I got about it either. So yeah, now that I have three, I think I need to find a good place to kind of put them all together. One of my coaches were asking me, oh, then what's your goal now? What, even if it's a small goal? And I said it'd be really, really cool to win, you know, a major championship before I'm done competitively playing. I don't exactly know when that time is, but I think it's good to have another goal, and that's definitely a goal of mine. And I mean, if it happens next week, I'd be pretty shocked to say, especially because it's like two of the biggest events, you know, in my season. So yeah, I don't know like if or when that opportunity is going to come, but I would love to be more in contention and kind of enjoy being in that kind of a situation. You know, I think golf returned to the Olympics in 2016 in over 100 years, and we had some unusual circumstances with Zika and COVID in the past two games, and this one is kind of the first one where it's back to normal. You know, we had 30,000 fans every year, and I think it was truly a celebration of sport, and finally where golf was, you know, fully, you know, integrated into the games. So I do hope that many more juniors, you know, get inspired not only by myself, but by seeing the games, and get the dream of them hoping to become an Olympian and represent their country one day. And you know, playing in the Olympics and representing New Zealand was, you know, one of the biggest honors of my life. And it, I think it's definitely a big dream that I think many juniors, not golfers, but in other sports, should you know, dream of becoming, because if I can do it, they can do it too, for sure.
Sorry if I've missed this one. Have you set a sort of a date for when you retire? Have you got a goal in mind for when you finish in golf? Or
I always said 30, but I said 30 like 10 years ago, and I don't even know why I said 30 at that point. I have bad days and good days, and you know, bad days I want to quit that day, and then good days you feel like you know, you could go and do this forever, and it feels like that moment's going to last forever. I personally don't know when that ending point is, but I obviously have set another goal for myself, so I'm not just like cluelessly playing on tour. You know, even if I was to stop today, like, I'm obviously very grateful for everything that has happened in my career so far, but I haven't really set an end date yet, but it's something that I need to think a lot about, and it's definitely not just an overnight thought, I guess, yeah.
Lydia goes off with Gemma Dryberg, Celine Boutier, but you need some coffee for that one, 2:32 Eastern Time for the ISPS Handa Women's Scottish Open.
That's about what time you go to sleep, isn't it?
In my prime it was, but there's a lot of talk of goals and goalposts and moving goalposts there from Lydia, and the idea that she had famously said she was going to walk away at 30. It sounds as though she feels as though she still got some unfinished business, and a little bit of love in this game is keeping her there.
And I also, with that, I also took that same takeaway, but as well, I looked at it and said, you know, there's such an ease about her now. She mentioned in Paris, those final 18 holes were the 18 most important holes of her life. To come out on top, to then qualify for the LPGA, the hardest Hall of Fame, to make it into that class, to become the 35th, I think now she can say, I'm playing with house money. And what that does for a golfer could go two different ways. Is the focus no longer there when she steps foot out there for the Scottish Open? Or is the ease something that becomes advantageous for her as she chases a major here?
That's a great point. I mean, what does it say about the resume that she's built that when she says she actually had to go search for another goal, that's something else to aim for, and wants another major championship? She already has two of them, but she wants one more. And next week would be a pretty big one. If you could walk away with the old course and the Women's British Open, that might make her rethink, you know what, it's not getting any better.
Well, I think there's also something to the brilliance of the athlete that knows when the time to walk away is. It's such a delicate balance, right? When you're still achieving, she just won gold. She just proves she's the greatest golfer in the world at those games. It's really hard then to say, I'm ready to step away right now. The taste and the drive continues to push you a little bit more. We might see that here with Lydia moving forward.
And that's what made her Lydia Ko to begin with.